Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
You're listening to Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a podcast about Linux, open source and amateur radio for everyone. Now here are your hosts, Russ, K5TUX, Cheryl, W5MOO, and Bill, NE4RD.
Well, hello everybody and welcome to episode number 223 of Linux in the Ham Shack. I'm Russ, K5TUX.
I'm Cheryl, W5MOO.
And I'm Bill, NE4RD.
All right, well, welcome everybody to another wonderful episode of the most terrific podcast on the internet. And as we've said before, go look it up. All right. So the first thing out of the gate, we're just going to talk really briefly about Hamvention because it is coming up very quickly. I think we're, 25 days away or something along those lines?
Yeah, it's getting close. Yeah, sure is.
It's getting very close. The GoFundMe campaign is doing well, but we could always use some more help. We're 60.5% of the way there. Yeah, so it's pretty good. But if you can donate, we would really appreciate it. There's only, 20 some odd days left. But we will be there. I have officially purchased the booth and the internet service and all of that. Sweet. All thanks to donations from our listeners.
Thank you, everyone.
But there is more to be done. We're getting the distros prepared. We're getting the merch prepared. We're doing all kinds of preparing.
We're preppers. Yes. I just put a set of tires on my car. What else did I do to the car? God, I changed out the mass airflow filter sensor. MAF sensor. And then Wednesday, my fuel filter shows up. So I'm going to be all set. And the diesel's going to run like a top. I'll get like my 49 or 50 miles to the gallon the way out there.
Very good. Very good. So that's that. We don't want to dwell on it too much. Just keep us in mind. If you got $5 or $10, you can send our way. If not, please share on all the social media networks out there and let all your friends know about it. And we will see all of you who come to Dayton this year, or actually Xenia now, not Dayton anymore. Actually, it was never in Dayton. It was in Trotwood, but
It's just the Hamvention,
right? It's the
everybody Hamvention. Tagged on, Dayton to it. So. Yes, and Dave, I don't need to do an oil change. It's it's all synthetic, and the last oil change came with a oil pan replacement.
Wow.
Actually, the last two times I changed the oil, I replaced the oil pan because the oil pan had a hole in it. So
nice.
It's to run out of oil rather quickly that way, but.
Yeah. So the stain in the driveway is pretty large.
All right. Your wife goes, honey, there's a big black spot in the driveway. What is that?
Oh, God. There was a black stripe from the street all the way to my house.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. The last time I got a hole in it, I was picking up my son and I left a huge puddle at his girlfriend's house. And then, there was a stripe all the way from that side of town to my house. Nice. I was surprised there was so much oil in the car.
Diesels
only a 1.9 liter.
Diesels tend to have a lot of oil in them, though. I know Cheryl's dad had a diesel pickup, and it had how much? It was like 12 quarts of oil or something.
Yeah, something like that.
It was a lot.
Yeah. And if you're lucky, there's like at least 10 quarts of diesel fluid that actually has gone in there as well. No, mine's only 5 quarts. It's large for 1.9 liter, but it's 5 quarts of oil.
All right, very good. Well, Bill is all set. He'll make it.
Make it. 1,600 miles to drive.
Yep. And we only have much less than that. We have like 750. I don't know. Somewhere.
Yeah, I just looked it up for Bill. It's 1,560 miles. For us, it is from here to Xenia, 645 miles.
Yeah, nice. So nothing. Drop in the bucket.
Yeah. I just have an extra day of driving, basically.
Right.
Well, yeah.
All right. So very good. That's all we need to say about the GoFundMe. The link, of course, is on the website and in the show notes and pretty much everywhere, all over the social media networks. And once again, we will see you out in Xenia in just a few short weeks. So very cool. All right. So we're going to talk a little bit about flowers blooming and trees blooming and stuff like that. Anyway, it's amateur radio stuff in the springtime.
That's right. Springtime. To the field we go. Yeah, I was writing this for our show notes this morning, and we were getting snowed on, so it didn't really feel much like spring, except for it was really big flakes. But yeah, now that the weather is improving, it's time to think about operating outside. I know this past weekend there was a QRP to the field event and a couple other events that required getting out there and taking your station portable. So I kind of wanted to mention a couple programs out there that you can do this and have some fun. One of the programs is part of the efforts of KX9X. That's Sean Kutzko. I can never pronounce his last name. Sean, KX9X. Formerly of the AARRL, he did the NPOTA, the National Parks on the Air. There is now just a Parks on the Air. So this is basically a very similar thing. It runs all the time. It has an awards system and everything else. And the number one rule there at Parks on the Air is that you and all your equipment that you use need to be within the perimeters of the park, whether that be a federal or state-owned park or state land or, you know, BLM land or, you know, whatever. As long as it's a registered location on their website, that's what you want to use. So they suggest using Google Maps and official park site maps and stuff like that, so that all your stuff is inside the boundaries of the park. But yeah, there's quite a few people using this program. A lot of people were excited about NPOTA, and this kind of just kept on, you know, after that 1 year of the National Parks on the Air event. Another popular program is Summits on the Air. And Summits on the Air has been carefully designed to make participation possible for all amateurs and shortwave listeners. It's not just for people that are willing to climb a mountain. In fact, some states, they have hills and, you know, tall precipices so they could be included in a Summits on the Air activation. But yeah, they need people at home, you know, chasers and spotters, and they also need the people to go up on the mountain. So they have many awards and certificates, and some of them are called, you know, mountain goat, and a shack sloth. And of course, a shack sloth would be for a chaser. So, and there's always always activity on there. There's a whole spotting system for Summits on the Air. So you can check that out on their website, and we have that linked in the show notes.
Very good. Have you done Summits on the Air? I believe you have. You did some last year, did you not?
Yes. I participated in one activation in West Virginia at the National Jamboree. It was actually my first Summits on the Air. I've thought about doing them here. There's just a little bit more involved with logistics here because the mountains are huge. I found a couple of shorter hikes, so it's only like 2.5 miles or something like that into it to get to the activation zone. And
only 2.5 miles?
Yeah, that's nothing.
Gotcha.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, the easy ones, the ones I consider easier to kind of get to that I don't have to drive quite as far, are about like a 7 mile hike with about 2,000 foot of elevation gain. So, yeah, those aren't terribly fun to hike, but they're definitely doable. But yeah, I found a couple of close ones that are like 2 miles, 2.5 miles and less, off of the Beartooth Highway up in the Beartooths here in the Absaroka Beartooth Wilderness that borders between Wyoming and Montana. And I think I'm going to try to do those this summer, just as soon as I have time and as soon as it's melted enough up there for that to even occur. Right now they're clearing the snow off the Beartooth Pass, which is the, you know, scenic highway that runs up there and stuff like that. And yeah, there's about like, you know, whatever, 6-7 foot of snow, 8 foot of snow. And
yay.
Yeah, it'll be a while for all that melts. Normally, good hiking up in the mountains here is towards, you know, July and sometimes later than that. So
August, September before it starts snowing again.
Yeah, exactly. And then you could still get snow. That's the thing. Is like all summer long, you can still get snow up there. And in fact, you can even get thunder snow storms, which are really crazy. So
you get thunder snow here.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. But yeah, I'm going to try. I'm going to try this summer. I've been saying I'm going to try, but this summer I think I have everything I need now. Finally, I'm just going to go do it.
Very good. Just let us know when you're going to do it so we can all work you.
Yeah, I sure will.
Very cool. So Summits on the Air, Parks on the Air, two things you can participate in all during the spring. And did you say when these all wind up? Or well, SOTA's all the time, but what about
POTA's all the time now too? So it's a ongoing thing, cool. Just like IOTA, you know, Islands on the Air and Lighthouses on the Air. That stuff runs all year long. And I think like your CUSOs, like, you know, start up different for each year. You have like certificate awards and stuff like that.
All right, sounds good. Excellent, excellent, excellent.
Excellent.
Excellent. Actually, do I even have that anymore?
You used to.
Yeah, I don't have that anymore. I'm going to have to go get that one back. I forgot one.
No, oh, no.
Yeah. All right. So I found this interesting article, well, a real short article, but it was at the Register, which is a UK publication. And it's a question and answer that came into the Register, and it was, do ham radios slow Wi-Fi? So I'm going to read this and then we can, you know, potentially discuss, I suppose. It says, your reader's letter from April 8th claimed that a neighbor's ham radio aerial affects his Wi-Fi. This is highly unlikely. The Radio Society of Great Britain, RSGB, suggests that neighbors work together. The operator keeps a record of when he is transmitting, the reader of when he is having Wi-Fi problems. This will identify whether it is the transmitter at fault or, as is more common, the modem. A common reason for Wi-Fi to deteriorate over time is congestion caused by increased use in nearby homes. This is more likely to be the culprit than amateur radio signals. I tend to agree with this, but I was curious if anyone had ever had occasion to wonder if their Wi-Fi was being affected by ham radio signals.
Well, the question is it really the Wi-Fi or is it the internet connection? And I would gather it's most likely the internet connection that's actually having problems. In like a cable modem system, there's possibility you'll get ingress where you'll actually get signal from outside into the cable because you have bad fittings or, you know, you have an open lead or something like that in the premise and it's picking up the signal. Or it could be that he's in such close proximity that the piece of wire that is running from his house to the pole is the exact same length it needs to be a resonant antenna or a radiator. And that you will diminish the signal noise on your cable modem. A similar thing can happen at least lengthwise with resonance on any type of DSL modem. Generally, those lines are run a little bit longer, so you don't have like shortcuts, but it's still a possibility. Ingress and egress, the cable companies work on that stuff. So like they're looking for signal leaking out of the plant and they're looking for signal leaking into the plant. So they monitor all this stuff. So that shouldn't happen. But it can happen. And normally it's always a customer premise issue where they, you know, they have a cable jack going to a cable box. They've taken the cable box out and they've left that little cable lead out, you know, with that little stub sticking out of it. Believe it or not, that leaks a lot of signal all over the damn place. So, and they can hear it out in the street. So think about that. You could be, you know, ruining somebody else's, somebody else's Wi-Fi or something like that. Cause, all the cable channels will, you know, basically run all the way into the gigahertz range. Generally not up to 2.4 gigahertz. Most cable plants stop at about 1.2 gigahertz, but it is possible. It is possible, but it won't affect Wi-Fi. I disagree with that completely, but it will affect your internet connection more possibility wise. I think Wi-Fi is just everybody associates Wi-Fi with my internet, but the Wi-Fi is just, you know, one of the connections on your internet connection, you
know. Right. And there's no indication actually in this that it's a DOCSIS type system, that it's cable. So it could be something else. It could be a modem connected to DSL as well.
Yeah.
It could be. I don't know how prevalent cable versus DSL versus, you know, other technologies for internet connectivity is in the UK. So. Right.
Now, would it affect Wi-Fi? Most likely not. I mean, you know, unless the guy is pointing, you know, let's say a satellite antenna directly at your Wi-Fi access point, then maybe, you know, it could happen.
Yeah. If it's something very close in frequency, absolutely. But I mean, there's no indication again of
you get some of those high-end satellite antennas for those guys that do portable setups or whatnot, portable, you know, like on the house with the, you know, azimuth and elevation rotors and stuff like that. I mean, those things could put out, you know, 23, 24 dB of gain. and then they got a brick in front of it. You know, shoot, those things are pushing 2,300 watts out the front of the antenna at 70 centimeters, which in some cases will reboot a transponder on satellite. Some of the older satellites don't like that. You have to control your power. You can actually, you know, reboot the satellite, which pisses everybody else off.
Yeah, because they have such a short time window in the passes anyway.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I mean, I would say it's most likely not, but it could be a maybe if you just consider the internet portion of it.
Right, and this article does suggest doing some diagnostic and trying to determine if it's actually the ham radio signal, and there are a couple of simple things that can be done to determine that. So
yeah,
there you go. All right, so moving on from our amateur radio topics tonight, we're going to talk about some open source a little bit. And the first thing is some Ubuntu stuff.
Yeah, yeah. We got Ubuntu Linux replaces alpha beta release model with testing weeks. And I don't know if this is official yet, but this came out via Fossbytes, picked up a mailing post from Simon Quigley and in the Ubuntu mailing list, where Simon suggests the following, that, you know, he's proposing that we get rid of the alpha beta one milestones entirely. We organize a monthly testing week, Tuesday through Thursday, which involves no archive freezes, no formally released ISOs, but testing every product, community, and canonical. And that is typically shipped as part of a final release, so including desktop and server. The goal would be to ensure that any issues that are ironed out early on, to foster collaboration between people, blah, 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 blah. So yeah, basically, you know, we went through this iteration of, you know, alpha, you know, beta 2, and then beta final and stuff like that. And I think they kind of want to get rid of that. Maybe like those last few weeks have their testing timeframes and then feel more like a rolling release until they're ready to release. And in theory, they're supposed to test this out with the 18.10 release. So we'll see if this comes into fruition here towards the latter part of the year.
All right. Interesting. Big changes in Canonical. Like, there haven't always been those.
We're going to Wayland. Oh, wait, no, we're not. Oh, we're doing this. Oh, no, we're not. Oh, we're going to Gnome. No, don't. No, we're not.
All right, so let's wake Cheryl up and see if she can read a couple of these flash topics we got in the segment open source for tonight, and I'll wait till she like scrolls down to the appropriate place.
That's right here.
Oh, excellent.
They're the ones with flash on it.
Flash, yeah. Yeah, which I had already scanned, or, you know, scrolled down to anyway.
Well, you know, there's this podcast called Linux in the Ham Shack, and they're all very it's all good and all, but they could be a little more professional.
Would you like me to belch or something into the microphone?
Sure, why not?
I could probably get one out later. Because,
yeah. Because, you know, I want to be the utmost in professionality.
Have another Bud Light Platinum. I'm sure it'll come.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Let me just slam this real quick here.
There you go. Funnel it.
Go give me a Dr. Pepper. I can belch through the whole, can read the whole thing while belching.
All right, go for it.
Okay, so flash topic. FFmpeg 4.0 Woo is a new major release, is now available. With too many updates to mention, the team strongly recommends users, distributors, and system integrators to upgrade unless they use current GitMaster. And the source is from the FFmpeg site.
Yeah, this has all kinds of improvements with the encoders, with the, you know, the NVIDIA encoder and everybody else, you know, so definitely look into it. If you're using FFmpeg for your regular use, make sure you're running 4.0.
There you go.
Woo.
For all of your transcoding needs.
Transcode, yeah. If you're using Handbrake, use it.
And our next flash topic is Ubuntu 18.04 LTS this week. The latest LTS release from Canonical is due this week. The alpha and beta builds have been solid. Looking forward to reviving the 17.10 shack box.
Oh, that was 18. My comment.
Yeah, to 18.04 as soon as possible. Yeah, I was like, who is doing this?
My shack box is being 17.10.
So Bill's looking forward to doing that.
It's also revving, not revving. Reviving.
Sorry.
Bill's like making up words
resuscitating
now.
Resuscitating
so.
It, right?
Yeah, no, I get it. Sorry. So the question is anybody going to upgrade? Over on the OMG Ubuntu page, there's a poll going right now just for that question.
Yeah, and let's let me look at the
results. OMG Ubuntu.
Oh my god. Let's see what the results say. So far, 49% say they're going to upgrade and install as soon as possible. And then 38% or almost 39% say they'll follow shortly thereafter as soon as there's a point release. And then
and where's the rest of the people? And,
yeah,
the rest of the people are undecided.
The 11% says they're not, no plans to upgrade or install. But they've had 15,000 votes, so that's a pretty good swath. Oh,
wow. Yeah.
So
OMG!
OMG! Ubuntu. For sure.
I love when we see poll results here, and it's like, 34% voted for, person A, and 37% voted for person B, and I'm
61% voted for person C.
Yeah, well, no, but there's no 61%. It's just like, where's the rest of the people? Well, those
are the people who didn't vote, clearly. Yeah. All right, very good. A couple of quick flash topics. So this is something I saw, and it was kind of unusual to see something posted in a local news site. The link to it, of course, will be in the show notes. And this is about an event coming up, which would have been useful last week, but I only saw it today. But it also references open source and the government, so I thought I would throw it in here. It says, learn about code.gov. The U.S. government has a department looking to spread open source projects, and members will be in Baltimore this week. Code.gov is looking to promote reuse of open source code within the government to cut down on duplicating development work and spread use of the code throughout the country. On April 26th, the event at Spark Baltimore will feature talks from the invited guests about what they're working on and federal source code policy, as well as how it can apply locally. This could be a great way to introduce code.gov to the community and open the conversation for how localities can use code.gov and other open source software for local governments. And the event is free. So it's also like really short. It's like 3 hours. It's embedded in the whole Spark Baltimore thing.
Oh, wait, it's run by the government. It's not free. You actually paid for it already.
Well, of course did. Right.
So you should show up because you paid for it.
Yeah. Right. If you're anywhere near Baltimore and you want to learn about how code.gov can spread open source to your municipality, you might want to check this out. And if nothing else, check out code.gov and see what the government is doing with open source anyway. Always a good thing. I think there was some mention about security issues and things like that that were going to be addressed by speakers. So that's always something worth talking about when it comes to the government and software. So there you go.
Yeah, they have another site too that actually just has the code and stuff like that, I think. Is that just code.gov? I can't remember.
I don't know.
But anyway, yeah, I think Obama actually started this. So you could take a look at all the projects and what they're working on and stuff like that. And,
right.
It's kind of interesting. It's they got quite a few. I mean, they have 1,000 projects on there right now. So there's quite a bit of code out there. This is the people's code. So again, you paid for this code probably at a very high contract rate. Not quite as high as mine, but pretty high.
Go see Judge Wapner and the people's code.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun.
Excellent. Is he still alive?
I don't know. I remember watching that show like a long time ago. What was that, in the 80s?
Yeah, probably the 70s and the 80s.
Yeah.
No, he just recently died. How about that? February 2017.
Wow.
He was 97.
Wow. Amazing. I feel old now.
You feel old? He was 97.
Yeah, I mean, but he didn't look that bad back then, maybe.
No.
It's like, well, there 40, you go. 40 years ago.
So, all right. So moving on, we're going to talk about Linux in the ham shack.
What would we do that for?
I don't know. Maybe just because it's what the show is called.
Yeah, I don't know. So I found this project. I think we've mentioned it before, maybe. And I couldn't remember if this was like useful for what you're doing with IRLP and everything else. But I thought I'd mention it here. The Mumble RF project is a patched version of the Mumble voice chat software, the software we're actually using right now to have this conversation and record the podcast. It's for use with two-way transceivers, ham radio, CB, PMR. Is that PMR, really? Public mobile radio, I guess, and others. The software allows connect two-way radio transceivers to mumble murmur servers in order to extend the range of radio frequency communications, which I guess would be very similar to IRLP, IRLP and Echolink. I guess if you know this is your linking way or whatever, it's different. Yeah, so it's basically patched up so it can run with like, you know, handling squelch and everything else. So yeah, if you're looking for an alternative to some other kind of linking software for the audio path, check out this Mumble RF. The link is in the show notes and it's at GitHub.
That sounds cool. I might have to actually investigate this myself since I'm doing a little bit of stuff involving linking repeaters and RF nodes together via VoIP.
Yeah, yeah.
That certainly sounds like another interesting way to do it.
It kind of felt relevant.
It is relevant. How fantastic is that?
Yeah, that's great.
So I didn't really have anything else to contribute to the show tonight, so I wanted to maybe talk a little bit about my upcoming IRLP project. I haven't really done a radio project in a really, really long time. But I was mentioning, you know, after doing all this work with SVX Link and Qtel and getting my system set up here and doing all of that, I remembered that I wanted to eventually set up an IRLP node. So I went and started looking at the IRLP hardware, and it turns out the stuff is not free, and at least as far as my pocketbook is concerned, not terribly cheap. So I made some noises about that in the chat room or something other, and Don KC9ZMY says, oh, I've got this thing, this IRLP node in a box, and I'm never going to use it. So I said, well, greatest fan of our podcast ever. what can I do to convince you to send that my way? And he's like, I don't know. Tell me what your address is. And I was like, well, if it's that easy.
Well, you didn't have the call book? Come on.
I'm not even sure I told him I was like good in the book, but. Either way, he was kind enough to donate the IRLP hardware. It was the kind designed by the, I forget what the actual name of the project is, but it's the IRLP that's designed for the Raspberry Pi. It's actually connected via a GPIO harness, but the rest of it, you know, is the same as the regular thing. So it's the IRLP board, the connectors that go to a rig, at least the 9-pin serial connector part of it, and the GPIO part that connects to a Raspberry Pi. So I had to get the rest of the stuff. So I kind of wanted to just kind of run down what I'm doing or what parts I've acquired so far. And I'm actually going to try and do this as a YouTube video or a series of YouTube videos where I'm actually filming my putting this whole thing together. But I figured I'd put this out here in case someone could remind me of something I might have forgot. That's always useful. But the things I've ordered for it is I've got a big project box because I'm using an ICOM IC2100H as my rig for this, which I'm actually going to have to do some modification on because IRLP requires carrier-operated squelch to work, and the ICOM 2100H does not expose carrier-operated squelch through any of its external interfaces. Not that it has any of those anyway. So I'm going to have to actually go in and solder a wire on there. So I'm going to have to do, you know, a bit of soldering to connect the RJ45 pins that are necessary for the TX audio, the speaker connection for the RX audio, the carrier operated squelch connection, and the ground. And I think there's push to talk, of course. So I ordered a solder station, helping hands thing, a third arm or a third hand, whatever you call those things. So I've got one of those because soldering is not my thing. So this ought to be interesting. That part should be a lot of fun. You might watch me burn up a mobile rig.
Don't burn yourself.
Please don't do that.
Well,
not in the house anyway.
We'll see what happens. So I've got the project box. It's a good sized one. It's about a foot by 10 inches by about 6 inches tall. Because I am going to put the whole thing in this. I've got the solder, the soldering gun, the soldering station. I ordered pass-throughs, so I can put pass-throughs through the walls of the project box for the Ethernet, the power connector. And was there another thing? I don't think there was another thing. Oh, antenna power connector. Was that? Oh, and Ethernet. Antenna power connector, Ethernet. Yes, those are the three things. Those are going to pass through the box. I've got a converter from 12 volt to 5 volt so that a single power connection can power the rig, the IRLP board, the Raspberry Pi all at the same time. What the hell else did I get for it? Some 9-pin ends, because I'm going to have to solder all those connections together because they come from various parts of the radio. And that should be most of it, I think. I think there was another something that I'm getting. but the idea is to have the whole thing totally self-encapsulated, so you can just take this whole IRLP node as a unit to wherever you happen to want to use it. And then without even opening the box, you can screw the antenna connector to it. You can plug in the 12-volt DC, and you can pass Ethernet out if you need to, but it will also have Wi-Fi. So that will be to get into the Raspberry Pi for programming and also for connecting it to the internet, which will be necessary for actually passing the audio back and forth between nodes. And that will be possible with Ethernet or Wi-Fi. So that is an upcoming project. And like I said, I hope to have the entire thing done as a YouTube video series coming up. So if anybody can think of something that I may have forgotten in all of that, that would be great. Because once I start diving into this, I'm sure I'm going to get like 3/4 of the way through and go, oh crap, I need this. but yeah, so if anybody has any ideas, that's great. And if you want to follow that, check out the YouTube channel. It will be on the Linux in the Ham Shack YouTube channel when I'll start filming everything, which should be soon. We do have some events coming up here locally, which are going to keep us from recording next Monday, which is the 30th of April. So there will be no live show on April 30th. Just wanted to throw that out there now. We will be doing a show on, May 3rd, Thursday. Mm-hmm. And that will be when we have our extra special super surprise
secret
guest. Yes.
Super secret.
Super secret. Yes. So just keep that in mind. And watch for the IRLP project. And if anyone has any input on the IRLP project or anything they'd like to see or something like that, or hardware suggestions or whatever, just send them my way. So
cool. And speaking of YouTube, and I realize I always like throw these random feedbacks that I happen to receive in personal email into the podcast, no matter where I'm at. But it was relevant. I had an email the other day from OH1H or KH, OH1KH, his name is Saku. And he's the one that told me originally that he watched all the videos and wanted me to rename them so they could be easily searched and stuff like that on our channel, which we did. He sent me an email just 2 days ago, though. He says, Peter over there at CQR Log just released a beta version of CQR Log 2 days ago and has quite a few changes, especially with regards to WSJT X Remote, and also to look at that XML RPC that I didn't cover very well in our videos. So he sent me some test videos that he did, but he's like, I'm wondering if you could make better videos based on my poor ones. So, I told him I'd check them out. I just downloaded them, and I'm gonna get to those. And I've been wanting to redo that anyway. That FL Digi, because I kind of just breezed through it real quick, and I didn't really get into the meat and potatoes of that XML RPC interface and stuff like that. So I think I'll upgrade my box here at home, my on 1804 as soon as it is final. And I'll probably do a quick video of that, and then I'll start working on these other two videos, and hopefully have those out before Hamvention.
Well, you have all kinds of stuff on your plate for Hamvention, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Get videos done. Get the distro done. Wow.
Yeah. So I guess we'll have to talk about that distro thing. I'm just, like I say, I'm not having good luck with Debian. I'm thinking they actually have a 32-bit build of Ubuntu, and
the evil Ubuntu.
Yeah. So I was actually loading that up today and seeing what it takes, and it's at least to get the live distribution working, it's not much, and I know it'll actually work because it's Ubuntu.
I'm thinking Russ tried to futz with Debian a little bit to build something a couple of years ago and had issues with it.
It was a while back, and I did have problems, but we'll do something. I don't know if there's going to be something ready for Hamvention, but we'll,
Yeah. If I can get it done this weekend, then I think we'll have enough time to send it over to Ted, not Ted, Don, right?
Don, KB2YSI.
KB2YSI, yeah, he's going to be burning the disks for us. If I can get that ISO over to him, then hopefully we'll do that. Otherwise, it will probably be the just Ham Radio Pure Blend from Debian, but I'm not sure they've even updated that for 9.0. I think it's still 8.5.
I think it still is. So, but we're going to try and be as close to current as we can.
Yeah. So, if we have to do that one, then we'll give you a link to a script that you can run to get everything updated.
There you go.
Yep. There you go.
We could definitely do that.
Yeah, we can give you a little piece of paper with some links on
it. No. We'll do better. A bash script. And we'll check that into a GitHub or something like that, and then it'll be able to get you upgraded.
Very cool. So it will be a really good time for us at Hamvention and for you too. Anyone who stops by the booth, we're going to have a considerable set of upgrades from last year. So you'll want to stop by and check it out. And we want to see you. So please do that.
If nothing else, you should see our car with all the stuff packed in it, because I'm wondering if there's going to be any room for us once we get everything packed.
We're the only ones who go to Hamvention with cars packed full of crap. You're mistaken.
Yeah, well, somebody's got to drive the car, and I'm not sure that boxes can drive.
Well, at least you don't have to pick me up this time.
That's true.
There's always
room. Figure out where to put all that crap in that one seat.
Yeah, I still remember.
Can you sit on the hood or something? Or maybe the roof?
Yeah, I still remember last year, Russ, like, shuffling stuff going, I think we've got enough room for Bill now. I was like, wow, okay, well, he's got like a sliver of a seat to sit in. He'll be good.
He's fine as long as he only brings one suitcase.
Yeah. Well, he should have flashed her with a backpack, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty much just a backpack.
Yeah. So.
All right. So very good. I think we're down to the end here. So very good. And we have a social media roundup, however. We got to talk about all those people who support us, which we try and do as much as possible. So Cheryl, let's hear who these people are.
All right. Well, this time for our Patreons, we have John Spriggs, Steve Sainer, Donald Gover, Robert Pitts, Paul Griffith, Jonas Rulo, John Zaruba Jr., Samuel Vines, Steve Metcalf, Chris Beggio, and Darren King. For subscriptions, we have Michael Jopling, Steve Nichols, Todd Bowers, Thor Wiegman, Stephen Harp, Charlie Brown, Kevin Murray, Wayne Carpenter, Doug Redder, Bill Pioter, Dylan Engel, Alan Wilson, John Clark, Michael Aiello, Robert Halliday, Brian Smith, Johnny Kinsey, Ronald Ikey, Robert Yerke, Michael Connolly, and Jeremy Hall. On Facebook, we have Ricky Patterson, Brian Bocamp. Not sure how they pronounce that. Fumzel Lewine, I'm guessing on that one too. Mickey Coro and Ryan Russell, no one on Google+. On Twitter, we had at Flapperon, at Code Possum, and at 3ZAW3TRZ. On YouTube, we had PK Crowan and Fox Nakamori. Mailing list, Mike, N7QXW, and no merchandise sales.
All right. So there we go. Thanks for everybody for supporting us in whatever way you can do that, even if it's just listening. We enjoy our listeners. That's why we do this every week. So with that, I think we are going to wrap up the show, and we are actually working on some new merch type stuff if we ever get our little device working with its Bluetooth problems and all of that. But that's a story for another day. So with that,
did you do the shout out to the chat room?
We haven't done the shout out to the chat room. Yes. So we also had in the chat room listening to us live tonight, Dave, KB0OWD, Don, KC9ZMY, Ted, WA0EIR, Paul, KE5WMA, and Harry _, who came and went, but he was there. Was there somebody else?
Anybody else show up after you did the list?
Nope, that was the last one, I believe.
All righty then.
Yeah. I mean, there are more people in the chat room.
They don't talk, so we don't know they're there. So if they'd like raise their hands or wave or, I don't know, shout out or whatever,
Now, granted, some of them are in completely different time zones,
right?
Which are not really compatible to our live recording because it's like the middle of the night right now, or
tomorrow,
yeah, or tomorrow, or whatever,
or tomorrow, or yesterday. I don't know the dates, whatever.
All right. So, thanks to everybody for listening to the show, and we will catch you all not next Monday, but next Thursday, May 3rd. So, with stay tuned for that guests. With the secret guest. Yes. That's right. So with that, we're going to get on out of here. I'm Russ, K5TUX.
I'm Cheryl, W5MO. I saw you reach for your pad.
I'm waiting for you.
And I'm Bill, NE4RD73.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a community-sponsored podcast. Our website is located at lhspodcast.info. You can support the program by visiting the LHS Patreon page of patreon.com/LHSpodcast or using the contribute link on the website. Get in touch via social media. The show has a presence on Google+, Facebook, Twitter, Discord, and YouTube. Or you can drop an email to info@lhspodcast.info or record a voicemail at 1-909-LHS-SHOW. That's 1-909-547-7469. Visit the IRC channel, LHS Podcast, on the Freenode IRC network. Also visit the online merchandise store at shop.lhspodcast.info for fun and fashionable LHS merchandise. Become an ambassador and represent LHS at a Linux convention or hamfest. Email ambassadors@lhspodcast.info or visit the website for details. The podcast is recorded live every Monday night at 8 o'clock p.m. Central Time. Connect to the stream at stream.blacksparrowmedia.net/8008/LHS Live. Until next time, over and out. Linux in the Ham Shack and the Linux in the Ham Shack logo are released under a Creative Commons Attribute Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License.